Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, we're back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in the studio. S&P futures up 9. NASDAQ futures up 48. Well, they were up earlier, and now not so much. Dub Bears. What do you think, Greg? Dub Bears.
They are who we thought they were.
Yeah. Who was that? Remember him?
Denny Green.
Yeah. He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
Nice guy. I mean, he was a Northwestern coach, correct?
I don't remember that one, but...
Yeah, he was the Northwestern coach for a while.
I saw that the Bears had great O-line performance, and great quarterback performance, and they...
What game were you watching?
Oh, wait, that wasn't that game.
No. Did you watch the game last night?
Some of it, yeah. It was good.
Now you're one of these,
I mean, anything after the Bears game was pretty good.
I mean, you're one of these guys. It's fantasy football. You know, you got your thumb on the pulse of the NFL, and you got,
fantasy
everybody.
Makes it more interesting for everybody. So
I'm not criticizing. Are you a big time gambler?
Not really. No.
All right. So let me ask you the question or the
only because. There's a 10% vig in everything. If there wasn't, I'd probably do a little bit more just because it's, makes it more interesting during the day.
Well, yes, it does. I mean, I guess you could bet on every walk. If you're sitting outside in a bar, you could bet on every walking by and whether they're going to fall. I mean, makes it interesting. And, I guess my question is the play where Atlanta had the ball late in the game and they needed a touchdown.
They lost by that touchdown, didn't they?
Yeah. The incredibly missed call on the pass interference.
Oh, you're thinking it's on purpose?
I'm asking. I'm just... How can I find the answer if I don't ask the question? I'm asking the question. Now
that would be very interesting, huh?
Now, my question is, before gambling, before the current gambling thing... Most people would think that something like that is just, well, we want Mahomes to win because he's popular and he's on State Farm.
And didn't Collinsworth say it on TV, too?
You know what they, they alluded to the fact that they thought it might have been a bad call. They went to break and came back and played it like 3-4 times, and Collinsworth was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
The guy having a bear hug, the guy had no chance for that ball. Absolutely no chance for that ball. He had him from the front, a total bear hug, and the guy couldn't get his arms up in the air or anything. Now, the question is that somebody got to that ref? The ref had money on the game?
The ref had, yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of levels to this. The ref has a...
I don't know if it's worth it for the refs to get... It would have to be some serious money that they pay the ref in order to get him to change the call.
Is it in the NFL? Those who want Mahomes losing.
That would seem more likely to me.
Now, how does that...
That's what he was saying. He's like, why? Or he gets a lot of those calls, doesn't he, or something. That was a lot of a contact.
Well, I mean, it was a ball game. Well, yeah. They would have scored from the one, but I think they probably would have.
Yeah.
Of course, the Bears wouldn't have, but, it was so egregious at a time when it's on Sunday night.
You got to believe they're gonna be looking at it this week and saying how.
Who's they and what are they gonna do?
Well, the NFL, like the owners and such, are gonna say, okay, well, this is too much now.
I don't know. Maybe they like it that way.
Maybe. When it's like that, and even the announcers calling it out on national TV, that starts the ball rolling on some things. You got to imagine.
Now that would be.
It's all about entertainment in the end, right?
Well, I don't know. It's all about money.
And that, too.
What was the... how much was Kansas City favored? Or were they in Atlanta?
I didn't look. That one, I didn't know.
I bet they were maybe... Can't be more than a couple points. They're in Atlanta, I would think.
Detroit, KC, line.
No, not Detroit, KC. That's next week.
Oh.
Atlanta, KC. But, I mean, I'm sitting there. That's absolutely egregious.
Atlanta, KC.
And it seems like the coach and everybody just said okay. Like they knew it was coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
It says Chiefs, Atlanta Falcons.
And how do
three
we,
point favorite.
The Chiefs were?
3 point favorite, yeah.
So how do we...
That's pretty good for being in Atlanta.
So how exactly...
And Atlanta had a great game the week before.
Let me ask you, as a younger gentleman than me, and I'll use the term gentleman loosely, how is it that my generation, early, you know, I'm talking about when I was young, the 60s, I mean, real young, if you were even seen with a gambler, you were suspended. The idea that there was even money on the games. Guess who actually was had a big fine? Talk about somebody who thought he controlled the league. You know what? Got a big fine one day for messing with the injury report. None other than Papa Bear himself.
For messing with the injury report.
He's well. The Bears, you know, didn't have that great of a team, but they had a couple of great ball players. One of them meaning Gale Sayers, which clearly was a game changer, and he. I don't know if he didn't put him on the injured list, or he did, or whatever, or left him off. Some story, and the gamblers got outraged, and the league thought he was being disingenuous and fined him by not giving a straight story about whether Sayers was hurt or not.
Interesting.
And Paul Hornung and Alex Karras, I think, and a couple other guys were suspended for a year. I think just for you call it consorting with gamblers. They were just seen with them. Well, now, if Caleb Williams walks into series tomorrow night and you sit down and have a drink with him, and you're betting on the games, everything's that's fine. Now you're a gambler, right?
I guess.
But everything's okay.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, why does this? I use the term generation, or this money thing that the NFL now wants to make money off the gambling.
I think that's more likely.
But how all of a sudden is? Are we going to keep all this straight? Especially in, like...
I don't think that's the priority.
Well, I mean, in football, national TV, I guess you're right. There is some sort of discipline to it. But the idea that people are betting on all these college basketball games in these little towns in the middle of winter, I mean, how the hell is anybody going to police that?
I don't know. Wasn't... I mean, gambling was from the beginning... What's his name?
You've seen The Natural.
Tim Mara or whatever?
No, the guy from Fix the World Series. That was
I'm talking about like the original owner of the Giants, right?
Was that the O'Mara family?
Yeah, Tim Mara. I don't know. It's definitely not new, and Bidwell was connected to Al Capone and such.
Well, but so. I what I'm saying is now everybody, we're talking about stuff that if somebody bet on a game and it was egregious, you know, maybe you could figure it out.
But I think the original owners were gamblers, so yeah, like well, that's where it was born out of.
They were everybody. I mean, they were rough and tumble businessmen, and knew everybody grew up in the same neighborhood, right? But that doesn't mean they didn't. They recognized them. I mean, you know, Paul Hornung was a big star. And so was Alex Karras to suspend for a year.
No, I'm talking about even before that. I mean, like the 30s.
Well,
the people who were putting out the product were like the actual gamblers. Or not the gamblers, the bookmakers.
I think they wanted the game to grow, and if it was totally... Well, look what happened to boxing. It got so crooked it died.
Right.
I don't think they wanted that to happen.
Yeah, maybe that's the way it'll go. But... I mean, there's so much. There's the personality aspect. It's the show aspect. The concessions. I mean, there's more than just the game now.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think No game is too big. I mean, you talk to our producer on Tuesday and Friday, and Ricky, who's Hispanic, he has no interest in it. But a lot of young kids aren't interested in football now.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, not many kids are playing it. I mean, I don't know. I like watching, but when I see something last night, I go, wait a minute. Unless they just were all out of position and just missed it or something, but I mean, the refs got to be watching the replay today and just cringing. That's the back. I'm not so sure whose call that is that close to the goal line. I mean, normally, let me get this straight. The ref is behind the quarterback, correct? And he watches the quarterback and he watches, I believe, the right tackle.
Well, that's all he's responsible for.
Right, but now the head linesman's on one side and the line judge is on the other.
Right.
One of them's responsible for the other tackle and for offsides and all that stuff. The other guy's responsible for offsides. But I don't know what happens if he goes downfield or what. Now, the umpire is across the line, even though they used to be like right by the middle linebacker. Now they're not there all the time, right, because they're in the way sometimes. Then you got the back judge and you got the field judge. Now, whose responsibility, what is? But now in a goal line...
I think it's whoever's closest at that point.
Probably, but in a goal line situation, you've only got 10 yards to cover. So the umpire is right in the middle of the field, and he's going to... I think he backs up, so there's got to be three people right there. Not to mention, the people on the line are only 10 yards away, and they're not afraid to throw a flag 10 yards away.
Right.
Normally.
I think the guy on the field can reverse something that... the line or the side judge does.
Well, if they get together and a guy will say, no, I didn't, from my side, it didn't look like you hit him. They pick up flags all the time.
Right.
But this particular one, how they didn't get together and say, the guy had no chance. He had no chance. And he didn't even bitch. The coach didn't bitch. It's like they all knew what was happening. Anyway. So what'd you make of, we have seven people shot in the city at a prayer vigil, and you really had to look around to find it. To anybody even talk about it. Yet in the news we'll hear about shots, you know, in other cities and so forth.
That was... I'm thinking that was the example of what's going to be most of these next couple years. They want to ignore what's happening so it doesn't get into the news. It's all about optics.
Do you realize what you just said?
Yep.
If a tree falls on the floor and nobody hears, did it really fall?
Is that where
we're going with this?
Yeah. They're not going to bring attention to it. Why would you?
Seven people.
Six shot, one dead, right?
Yeah.
Or unless 30, something happened later.
Something like 30 high-capacity bullets. For two people to pull up in a car, and people are having a vigil for somebody, nobody's armed, or if they are, it's in their pocket. Open up... People don't do that kind of stuff in wartime. I mean, what is the morals?
Not
of the
sure
people
the rules of engagement apply at gang anything.
Well,
if you know where people are going to be, it doesn't matter if they're in front of Maple and Ash or at church.
But where do we? How do we squeeze?
Did I tell you the guy was shot outside my building the other day?
No.
Like maybe 20 feet from my entrance. That was weird. I went to...
When do we decide to find these people and squeeze them out of society?
Yeah.
What I can't get over why people
not
put up with
happen.
It. When you say that, now you're younger, you have a different perspective on the life. Why don't you feel like I do that the job of government is to protect people so they don't all become vigilantes?
I don't think the job of government is to protect people.
Why?
I think the job of government is to protect the minority. So in essence the job of government is to protect the criminal from me from going outside with my shotgun and blowing his head off.
Well, that's maybe sometimes
mob
it looks
justice
like, but if you don't have I don't understand why. I'm not giving you crap, maybe I am. In today's education system, when people form a society, I mean, if we're living out on the frontier and somebody wants to take our property, I guess it's up to us to defend it, you know. But then when people become civil, they say, wait a minute. Everybody's job isn't to go shooting and fighting with everybody else. We're going to have some system of law. And by the way, we're not going to have that job. Somebody else does.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Hence Matt Dillon. I mean, if there was a problem, you told Marshall Dillon, and he took care of it. That way, everybody didn't have to run around and start shooting people. Now we're back the other way. And now the question is, why, if I live in Inglewood, if I live in someplace, why should I have to put up with this? My son, they mistook him for a gang member. He's dead. Oh, they screwed up. They mistook him for a gang. What's okay? No, it's not okay.
I don't think it's okay, but I don't think the police are necessarily there to...
Well, however you want to define it, it's for society to be civil, there has to be somebody whose job it is to take care of the people who don't want to behave like everybody else. I mean, this goes back to how many thousands of years. There's always going to be a couple people that feel differently about laws and feel differently about the way they should live. And people say, we're not going to put up with that.
But right, the people say we're not going to put up with that. They gather a mob together, and then they go start lynching.
Okay,
or
but I'm saying...
That's what the police are there to prevent.
That's exactly right, but now they're not.
They're more and more concealed carry.
And is that proper?
I don't know. It's just what is. But that's what the police are supposed to discourage people from going out and getting revenge.
That's an incredibly odd way of looking at this.
I think that was the original way to look at it.
But you're saying now it's all changed.
I'm saying now now people have the perspective that you're saying right now, and it's showing up in different ways in different places.
Well, they're not.
I think
it's not
Hal
happening.
Would be the one.
It's not happening. There's no question about that.
That too.
But I mean, if you ask anybody, I'll say over the age of 50. They will say the job of the police is to protect you from these other people so you don't have to do it yourself or don't try and do it yourself.
Yeah, I think that would be backwards.
You don't think that's the way it ought to be?
I think the police are there to protect us from each other.
I thought that's what I just said. But they're not there to protect you from me. They're to protect... from somebody getting whacked by a car at 150 miles an hour. I mean, the whole idea, right? That's why I don't get the young, somehow in school, and I'm not, people get together and they say, this is how we're going to live. By the way, nobody gets to drive 100 miles an hour. It's 50. The roads are not designed for that.
Yeah, that's the law part.
Okay, but every law implies enforcement. That's what I don't get about the I won't say the new generation, but If somebody goes through a stop sign and they think it's okay, they don't understand why they're getting pulled over. It's not okay because people have collectively gotten together and say there ought to be a stop sign here for everybody's safety. Now, whether it should or shouldn't be, there ought to be a way to redress that for you to come back to the city council or the town council and say...
Right, and it used to be that someone would get angry and go take care of it. And
no, I'm talking about that. You should go back and say, hey, look, guys... There's no reason for the stop sign on a Saturday or Sunday morning because there's nobody there. I mean, but while it's there, a law implies enforcement. Now, I know we got too many laws, and I know all this. I get where you're coming from and all the mistakes here, but the fact that people don't even understand the principle. Well, I obey the law if I think it's the right one. Well, okay. But now we have people that don't think laws against killing people are the right ones. Is that okay? Are we moral relativists?
I don't think that they really care about that part. I think they just care about the part where you wronged me, so I'm going to kill you.
But okay, but the randomness of it.
I don't think it's random at all. I think it's very targeted.
It's the randomness is who they hit. That's the random part.
I think probably the one guy who they were going for probably died.
Okay, but now. Let's go back to the mob era.
Yeah.
You know, but the mob era, even those guys, if you went to hit a guy and you hit his kid, that wasn't right.
Right.
Now, I mean, I'm saying I don't want these people's morality, whatever it is, to all of a sudden the mayor go, well, you know, we didn't give somebody enough lunches or something when they were a kid. I mean, this has to be stopped. Then at the first level, people are going to leave, which you're seeing the city.
Yeah, what's there to stop it, though?
Well, there are people like me who think that civilized society can always muster enough power to squash criminal element if they want to. Now the question is, why don't they want to? Are they making money from it? Is it a social thing? Is it a culture thing? I mean, what is it? I think it's more money than culture.
Good question.
Did you see Audrey, who's, you know, get some, you know, she gets some pretty different news. There's an African-American guy who allegedly an alleged gangbanger, right? And he's running some community thing now. God knows what that is all about. You know, maybe legit. And he's outraged because in some areas the Venezuelans are seeing what's going on and they're trying to encroach. This is an outrage that we're letting these people encroach on our criminal enterprise. And he's right up front with it.
That's not unbelievable, but it's ironic.
Yeah, so. It's kind of really something. All right, so we got baseball. It looks like you think I'm going to say not the only reason, but do you think the fact that what is Dylan Cease is 18-3 for Atlanta? Do you think that's
unbelievable?
Think that's the reason why the Cubs can't catch Atlanta?
Unbelievable.
Now, why exactly do the Sox have to get rid of him?
I think they're asking a lot of that, or at least not get anything. You know, they definitely are looking at his performance and saying maybe we missed by a year or two. But his contract was, I don't know. I mean,
He didn't go right from the Sox to Atlanta, didn't he? Did he stop somewhere else?
Yeah, yeah.
He did?
Dylan Cease, what was it? His contract with the Padres is just a single-year contract.
I thought he's in Atlanta. He's in Atlanta.
Oh.
But he's the reason why if Atlanta gets in the playoffs, they might have a shot because of him. I mean, he starts every series. I mean, that's he could get hot. He could carry him.
I don't recall what his term deals were, but I think when he left, it was $5.7 million or
Kevin
something.
Kevin says he's on the Padres. That's right.
Yeah, $5.7 million, and then now it's. Now, he's not a free agent. He's, I think, signed for $8 million for a single season.
Well, then he'll be a free agent.
He'll be a free agent in 26. But I mean, he was $750,000. Let me see if this is right. He was $750,000, and then he went to $5.7 million, and then. They wanted to do a 1 year $8 million with the White Sox, and I think then that was arbitration was avoided with the Padres.
All right. Well, and the White Sox are now they've now tied the worst record ever in the modern era, which is the Mets, and they got 6 games to go. I don't think they win all 6. Just saying.
No, that's not going to happen.
What do you suppose that locker room's even like? I mean, are people just counting the days, or are they like big X's on the calendar on the wall, or what?
They're gonna have some kind of party.
I can't even the thought that there aren't even young people coming up that were saying, you know, God, look how good this guy is. He started the year in AAA, and all of a sudden, the last month, he's playing pretty well. I don't see any of that either. Do you?
No.
I mean, how did they? When you have one of the worst farm systems in baseball, and that's the guy you put in the GM spot, you got to wonder. I can't imagine anybody. But some of these teams, I mean, look at the Cubs played the Nationals. The Nationals got kind of a crummy record. That kid who pitched Saturday is really good. You know, he had a no hitter through 7 or something until what's his name ran into one, Patrick Wisdom. The guy swings a million miles an hour, and once in a while he connects. I mean, he's strong as can be, but he just, of course, they put him up in situations now where they want him to hit a home run. So there's no regular at bat for the guy. I mean, they're always kind of down, and well, he's played the last few days, but they put him up in a pinch hitting situation when they're down like 2, with two people on base in the eighth inning, so they want him to swing for the fence and hope he connects, because he did one game and hit a grand slam. But now, you know, that guy, who knows what his career is going to be like when all he does is either strike out or once in a while hits a home run. It's, you know, it's kind of crazy. SP Futures up 475, NASDAQ Futures up 28. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm talking about Matt Burns on the board, and we have Greg Pappas in the studio. By the way, I feel like Belushi. Did the Germans bomb Pearl Harbor? Chris Sale is on the Atlanta. I'm getting confused because the Sox have so many people that are pitching well for other people, and the Sox are losing every game. Dylan Cease is on San Diego. The guy I was talking about was Chris Sale. What's the difference? Former Sox pitchers, right, Greg?
About 10 million.
Well, 10 million difference, yeah, but still, I mean, saying that's... That's the now if the Sox had those two guys, I don't think they'd have lost 100. And how many are they going to lose? 126? Anyway, S&P futures up 4, NASDAQ futures up 24. They were up more than this last night. Dow futures down 4. I don't see any stocks doing much of anything here. I've got Microsoft down $2. It was up last week. I've got nothing else really. We've got Intel up 88 cents. Intel's this big move to the upside now because somebody's looking at them, but they're down so much that a couple of bucks up from here doesn't really thrill me all that much. I don't know what anybody's going to think they're going to buy there, but anyway. Over in Europe, we've got mixed bag here. DAX up 107.6%. The FTSE's down 14.2%. CAC around down 14.2%. So the DAX is the lead. I'd say more up than down. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 568. They're not open today. They're great. The last day they opened were 920. They're closed for some reason. Hang Seng down 11. Call that flat. And Shanghai is up 12.4%. Shanghai trying to make it back to 2750 at least, but not there. 2748. On Friday, with the Dow up 38, the S&P's down 11, NASDAQ down 65. So, for those who want to remember that, it was a very slow day. Bonds up 3 basis points, 3.75. The Bund down 5 basis points, 2.17. So, since the Fed has cut interest rates, or they've been moving to cut interest rates now for a while, the short-term rates are down, the long-term rates are up. And when people talk all day long about how mortgage rates are going down, which they did last week, you got to be careful because they actually trend off the 10-year rate more than they do the 2-month rate. So we'll see if these long-term rates keep going up. They may not. Oil up 30 cents, 71.25. The Brent up 21 cents, 74.70. Natural gas up 5 cents, 248. RBOB unchanged, 203. Gold, which has been a pretty much of a tear, up $1.30, 26.47. So now it's kind of in this middle 2600s kind of hanging here. Silver, however, down 51 cents, 30.99. That's 1.6%. That's kind of odd. The one's down that much and the other's actually unchanged or up a little bit. Foreign exchange, 111.2 on the euro, 133 on the pound. So the dollar's still a little weaker than it was a few weeks ago. Japan, 143. That's pretty much steady. Bitcoin, up 484, 63,482. That's going to be close to, it's the highest we've seen in quite a while. So Bitcoin's doing pretty good. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Bears suck.
Oh, yeah. It was not a good show yesterday. Currently 6:39 a.m. on September 23rd, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, 62 degrees at O'Hare this morning. High of 69 today. Mostly sunny skies with little cloud coverage. Tonight, cloudy with some passing showers and a low of 62. That storm we had yesterday was a bit of a shock for me. Down in Phoenix, 75 degrees right now. Later in the day, high of 101. Low of 72 with sunny skies all day long in Phoenix. In the MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to the San Diego Padres 4-2, and Cubs beat Washington Nationals 5-0. In the NFL yesterday, Bears lose to Colts 21-16. With the Packers, though, beat Titans 32-14. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
Didn't Minnesota murdered the team Bears lost to last week, the Texans?
That's right.
The Bears, they're the worst team in the division, aren't they, Greg, by far?
Yep.
do we have Mr. Flanagan?
We do indeed, yeah.
You do.
John, what's up? How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Okay. So Kevin's telling me that I shouldn't be all over this Chris Sale thing, but the fact is the guy used to be a White Sox, now he's in Atlanta. If he wasn't there, the Cubs would be in the playoffs. Just saying. Cubs could have picked him up. They didn't.
The Cubs drafted Cease, didn't they? That was a long time ago.
Yeah. So, John, just when you think you can enjoy your weekend, I wander into some place, I won't say where, and on the TV is Newsmax. And I don't know which of the... You sit there and listen to this. And it's the subject, you know, that... The people on the show, because we're all over the markets and so forth, no reasonable amount of bit about. We're talking about inflation and money flows and things like that. So the people from on Newsmax say, here's how dumb Kamala Harris is, because she gets a question about inflation and absolutely doesn't know what to say. She stumbles along on gouging and, you know, supply chain and blah, blah, some whole string of something where she knows absolutely nothing what she's talking about. So then the lady says on Newsmax, Compare that to our guy. And they put Trump on there. He was just as much of a blithering idiot. Starting to talk about, oh, if I was oil, when I get in office, oil is going to go down so far, and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I mean, what is he talking about? He was just as bad, if it's even possible. And then the announcers thought there was a huge difference between the two. Who's the dumbest of the three, Jen?
Well, you can't trust these news outlets to be anything other than partisan, you know, cheerleaders.
But I thought he actually. But after her preamble, I thought he was going to say something intelligent. He didn't.
But it felt good.
I'll kind of depart from the Newsmax take on Kamala Harris. You know, she sounds so stupid. The big objection I have to Harris is that she's, you know, not well spoken when it comes to like handling crowds or, you know, a subject she hasn't had a chance to memorize some answer to. But in other ways, I don't think so much that she's stupid as that she's just completely.
I don't think she's stupid at all.
Ideologically, she's ideologically contaminated to such an extent that she's got, you know, a Marxist vocabulary that, you know, she hides well enough so that most people don't know its Marxist roots. And this is what, you know, she comes off as being somebody who's kind of slippery and loose and not very careful in what she says, and I think it's quite the opposite. I think if you really parse what she's saying, I reject that she's stupid. I think she's just, you know, completely off the rails.
Well, you know, we might as well talk about it. My total disagreement with virtually everybody and the people on the show that are from your point of view is that I think you're missing a whole level. I honestly do. This is not a criticism. You guys are my, you know, God's sake, you're my best friends, you're the smartest people I know. But somehow you're missing a whole level here. And I don't know how, I obviously have not been able to express myself well enough to explain it to anybody where they believe me. So you got that going for you, Jed. I'll take the hit on my end, but this is not Marxism. It's not communism. It's a reaction, in my opinion, to fascism. It's a reaction to a few companies. Now, we can all talk about bars and, you know, beauty parlors and barbers and stuff, but it's a reaction to really a few people controlling every single industry with their nose up the ass of government. And it's people like Harris and like other people saying, wait a minute, if you're going to do that, somehow we have to provide for the other people who are sucking on the wrong end of this. It is absolutely not socialism in the sense of Sweden, where everybody, really everybody, including the big guys, are in the same boat. That's not my style of governance, but if people want to do that and it all works for them, that's fine. In Sweden, you know, not here. But what is happening now, if somebody says, wait a minute, some people now have so much of the dough that regular people, like our parents and we grew up, are never going to afford a house, never going to afford a car, we're going to say, wait a minute, we don't want that. We don't want people. So what's the solution? Maybe the government should provide enough money to bridge the gap from what the other people have stolen from them to somehow get in the house. That is not nowhere near. It's something, and I'm with you, that it's horrible. But it isn't socialism where everybody gets together and says, we're all in this together. It's not a kibbutz. It's a reaction to, I mean, it's a reaction to fascism, in my mind. Fascist economics. So tell me where I'm wrong. I don't think I am.
Well, yeah, I think it is, you know, socialistic. When she says, you know, she's for an opportunity economy, and this is this, you know, the phrase that's bandied about by Tim Walz and everybody in Harris's circle, and the pundits have adopted it as being some kind of meaningful phrase. But Tom, it doesn't mean at all what I think the average person would like it to mean. Just take the word opportunity and substitute equity. And this is what she's pushing. It's not that, you know, everybody's going to have an opportunity. It's that everybody's opportunities are going to be given out willy-nilly to the people who are most deserving because they have somehow been disserved or underserved. They come first, and everybody else who's, you know, doesn't quite fit, check off all those boxes comes last.
Everybody,
so everybody now is treated, you know, like you are only allowed to reach the same level of prosperity as
we've
the
already done
person.
It. We've already done that. I think we've already done that.
Well, we're doing it again then.
Well, look, she didn't cause the fact. I mean, just look at every industry, John. You know this. I mean, because you got your eyes open. Like, look at the doctors and the dentists and people from our era, most of which are retiring. I'm going to say that the doctors who they're still alive that are 75 to 80, when they got out of med school or dental school, especially dental school, they worked for somebody for 4 or 5 years, were able to somehow borrow some dough either from the guy they worked for who was retiring, and they were able to buy a practice and had a real nice life and put their kids through school. And by the way, they charge less than they're charging now. And that was the deal. Name me, if we knew, a bunch of dentists aged 30 right now, name me one coming out of dentist school with the loans and stuff he needs to come out of there with the amount of money that he could never borrow now. And a person probably would never even think of financing them. Name me one person who was able to buy a practice at age 30.
There wouldn't be any practices to buy.
Well,
that's what's happening.
But because they've all been
everybody's an employee of some people.
Yeah, right. And so. And I'm saying the people like Harris look at this and they say this sucks. Now what can we do? Their response is to have government somehow provide for all the people who are that's not the same thing as everybody, including Jeff Bezos and all these other people, getting in a room and saying, we're all going to be socialistic. That's not the case at all, in my opinion.
It's putting a lid on people's ambitions so that nobody feels they have the right to earn any more money, have more distinction in a field, to be better informed or better paid than anybody else. This is the essence of socialism. And this is all that I think Harris has to push.
She's accepting.
That's the only way I can see it.
No, she's looking at the grim reality that our world is dead. Our world is dead. These young kids are not coming out of school. They're not getting a serious job. There's no way they're an entrepreneur. That our world is dead, and now they're reacting to it. How can we at least make sure that they have medical care and have a place to live? It's a horrible reaction. The reaction ought to be to go the other way and enforce some antitrust laws and things like that. But they're not going to do that, and nor do they have the power
now,
to.
Look how, you know, say public education gets treated in this. It isn't about excellence. It isn't about competitiveness. It isn't about merit-based, you know, performance, that you try to get a good grade in the class. You try to be at the top of your class. And that there's some reward if you do work hard to get there. No, it's about discouraging everybody so that nobody succeeds, everybody fails.
That's
why we have the school system we have.
I think, unfortunately, when we were at Ute at Notre Dame a long time ago, I still remember some of those days. The thought was, I think just about everybody came out of there with no loans, or if they did, they were pretty small, right? Came out of there with no loans. The idea was, even though your first generation college, most of them from the south side of Chicago or the south side of Cleveland or where the hell everybody came from, that you could change the world. You could be a mover and a shaker. Now nobody thinks that way, John. That is all locked up for 500 people or 1,000 people. You can be a wealthy employee at Microsoft, but you're not going to be an owner of any place. Everything has changed. It's a recognition of that in some way. It's horrible. I'm with you. I'm with you on every one of the symptoms you're talking about. I feel as badly about them as you do. I just think there's a layer in the middle that a lot of people are missing, and it's why it's going this way.
Tom, you know, the stuff that leaked out over the weekend about the Chicago Public Schools assigning grades to students, you know, with whatever linguistic hurdles they have to overcome or cultural hurdles. Specifically, you know, the migrant population has flooded the city and flooded the schools too, to give these people passing grades regardless of what they've done. And of course, this is the same mantra that every other student in the Chicago Public Schools has been living under for a long time now. Pass them along, give them A's, give them a trophy, give them a certificate. It doesn't matter if they can't read.
Who cares about that? You know, I'm as appalled about that as you are. Maybe more so, because I know my...
That's equity, Tom. That's equity.
That's...
Everybody is treated so indifferently by the education system that nobody learns anything. Nobody's smarter than anybody
disagree.
Else. Everybody is equally dumb.
Kevin texts in, Harris isn't reacting to fascism. She's a willing participant in it. I think she realizes she can't fight it. How are you going to fight?
I don't want her as president.
Right, who among us? Who among us, without getting...
I want somebody who's aware of it and hates it and will say so. I don't want somebody who goes along
okay.
with it.
Okay. And you know what? We have 7 of those people on this show. Not one of us would get a vote for dog catcher. If we decided we're going to sentence one of the people on the show to run for office, and we put down all the stuff we want to have happen, we want antitrust, we want these big farmer broken up, we want this, that, the other, all these esoteric things that, by the way, really should happen, and we want everybody in school, when they come out of there, to be able to multiply, divide, read, have some kind of comprehension of what they read, be able to write a letter if they had to, the basic education that you and I all know that everybody should have. If we ran on that platform, we wouldn't get out of the neighborhood, Jen.
Well, we're running in the wrong city, one thing.
Well, no matter where we ran, we wouldn't get out of the neighborhood. Do you think at a national scale that if you ran against busting up big business, that somehow or another they're not going to find you and I having sex with somebody we never even met 40 years ago and wish we maybe would have? I mean, we'd get nowhere. Gee, these guys went to Europe and they were banging 9 girls. And we so wait a minute, Chad, we missed that trip.
But it seems like what you're saying is we've run out of political solutions.
Yes.
To these very entrenched cultural problems,
without a doubt.
So we just have to live with the problems and make do with it.
No, we were there in 1929, and look what happened. And fortunately, economically, a war came along, or God knows where we would have ended up. It isn't like it's never happened here before. I mean, you know, I'm just.
We're overdue for a shakeup, I will say.
Without a doubt.
And one of the things I hope gets shaken up is this idea that let's all be collectively stupid.
Well,
because that's what teachers' unions are enforcing.
Well,
that's what the mayor of Chicago is 100% behind.
John, this whole thing that's going on in Chicago, we both know is a fiasco. And I mean, the idea that kids come out
and
of school...
But it's not the only city, Tom.
It's not the only city.
Means.
But as to why people decide kids don't... John, you know, I mean, of all the people you know that the one person who thinks knowledge is power, I feel that more than anybody else. But now knowledge is almost considered dangerous to some people.
Well, not only that, Tom, showing up for work on time is considered a sign of white supremacy.
Yeah.
Punctuality, courtesy, none of these things are free of this kind of pain.
I would hope nobody...
That's why you get a bunch of people who pay no attention to anybody else's feelings or sensitivities, and everybody gets to do what they want, and you can't criticize anybody because everybody gets to do what everybody wants to do.
Well, I think...
That's what's happening with our...
What you're saying is people in our generations were awful parents or something.
I don't know. It might be part of it. Something went kaplooey somewhere along the line.
Well, I mean, I think if you were to drive in certain neighborhoods, certainly in a lot of the white neighborhoods we know about, and you have a bus and you say, roofing jobs available, $50 an hour, you're driving out there with nobody on the bus. Right.
Right.
I mean, I don't. I mean, I remember when the 2007-2008 fiasco was going on, and was that when everybody was laid off? Yeah, I guess so. And so a lot of people were, just getting out of school. Guys are playing ball with, and I was, we weren't doing this show. John and I were on The Score, and And one of the guys was Matt Weber. He goes, yeah, my like five of my guys are laid off. I said, man, I still know a bunch of people. Why don't I get us some painting contracts, and we'll grab a weekend, we'll paint houses. I'll teach you guys how to paint. And, I got some stuff, some equipment. We'll get some more, and we'll... Oh, my guys don't want to do anything like that. I said, well, you just said you were broke. Yeah, but we don't want to paint. Okay, then. Okay, then. You know, it's... Not saying anything wrong with that. It's just, you know, who's manual labor? The Hispanic guy down the block? I mean, you know, come on.
That runs completely counter to the mantra that everybody belongs in college. So, of course, if that's true, then your college degree isn't going to be worth very much because it will be pitched so low that anybody can get in, and whether they show up for class or ever do a paper or ever do honest work, they're still going to get a passing grade, and they'll probably graduate summa cum laude.
But
what kind of a degree is that? Why bother?
But there's a certain simplicity to accomplishment that I think you'll learn at various levels, okay? And a grandfather used to tell me, Tom, you need the tool, you need the part, and you need the man, all in the same spot at the same time, right? You need the painter, the paintbrush, the ladder, and the paint, all in the same spot at the same time, right? There's a certain simplicity, and I think when you're putting a rocket up in the sky, it's the same thing. It's just more complicated, right? We need this. This has to happen. This has to happen. There's a certain logical flow to everything that I think you learn at a simpler level. Hey, we're going to cut this guy's grass. Yeah, but we don't have a lawnmower. Well, maybe we should find a way to borrow a lawnmower. Well, then we got to edge it. Well, we got to borrow or buy the edge. There's a certain simplicity to all this, isn't there? You're supposed to learn at a young age.
Well, you see, the problems that, you know, stand in your way of, say, you know, getting a skill that you can turn into money, doing it better than somebody else, being competitive and smarter and anticipating things. But we live in a culture now where that sort of inventiveness and ambition is frowned upon, if not actively crushed.
Well, Jan, there was...
You listen to any Democratic rally, Tom. You listen to any teachers' union rally. It's all about everybody should be at the same level. Our schools should treat everybody equally. Our job opportunities should be the same, no matter whether we're illiterate or not. It doesn't matter. The only way people succeed in a culture is by appreciating and participating in a system of elitism, where, you know, the dumb ones don't design the rockets, the dumb ones don't design the transportation systems, the smart ones do it, and the dumb ones, you know, appreciate it and enjoy it and, you know, get to, you know, reap its benefits too. But when we say elitism is a bad thing, we don't value excellence, we don't value people who are better at stuff, and we tell them they're not better at it, because what do you have to prove that? Everybody is the same. That's when you get transportation systems that don't work. That's when you have a military that doesn't win wars. And that's when you have people who go to McDonald's to get a job and they don't know how to subtract or add.
Why? Here's the question we're both dancing around. I mean, maybe not dancing around so much, but trying to... Now, if Audrey will be on later, but if Audrey went to Kelly High School, which is a blue-collar neighborhood, where is that, like... 45th in California.
It's like Brighton Park.
Yeah, what was it?
47th Archer.
Somewhere in there, yeah. And a big, huge place. And when Audrey went, there were people, and I don't want to call them, there were people who weren't college prep. I'm not going to say dumb. There were people who would much rather work in the trades. Audrey claims they had levels for everybody. You know, she was in the college prep. Audrey's very bright. And she said, but there were woodworking classes. There were stuff in mechanical drawing. There was engineering. There was all in the same place. Everybody who, I won't say the dummies and the smarties, but I'll say those that had different talents. Some people were in welding class. All this went on in the same neighborhood, and you were able to accommodate pretty much everybody. There were ladies that took, maybe we're going to be seamstresses. There was classes in that. There was all kinds of stuff in the same building. In the same building, that without any sort of, I don't know if the people in college prep put their nose up on the guys in welding class. I sure would hell wouldn't have, because I don't know how to weld. I'd love to be able to know how to weld, but somehow we were able to. We school system was able to accommodate this. Now we decide the schools in Chicago basically suck. And what are we going to do? All the white people are pissed off. Not the white people, the Asian, smart black people, you name it. Because Limbaugh on the south side is a terrific place, and it's mostly black. So it's not a question of color. The people who have the kids that are going to study more, do something, maybe the parents are more, whatever it is. I'm not going to say smart and dumb. The schools are all degrading. So the short-term, probably dumb solution, rather than just fixing all the schools like they maybe ought to have, John, they said, okay, we're going to have these schools where you can test out, and essentially the smart kids can opt out of the degradation in the high schools, correct? And all of a sudden, my niece went to Whitney Young. That was the first one, right? Then you got Walter Payton, and then you got Jones, and others, what, probably eight of them, Lincoln Park, and God knows
Northside,
what.
Northside.
Limbloom. You've got Lane a bunch Tech, of them. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the other schools now don't have the college prep stuff, because anybody who's, I'll say, smart enough to get in that is out of there. Now the other schools are degrading even more. And here it is 10 years later, make that 15 years later. My niece has been out of Whitney Young maybe 15 years, 18 years. So now all of a sudden you say, wow, look at the difference now between the kids in Walter Payton or Jones or even Whitney Young and the people left in Inglewood. And you sit there and go, holy bleep, Batman, look at this difference. And the mayor goes, it looks to me like we're getting a two-tiered society. Well, yeah, you are. You're the ones who did it. Instead of making all the schools, or most of the schools, in such a way where everybody could go there and get what, and be able to proceed at their pace, where everybody had to learn how to add, subtract, multiply, divide, read, and write. At least everybody had to do that, because, by the way, you can't be a welder if you can't read, you idiot. I mean, that type of thing. But now we went the other way.
And you can't do mechanical drawing, right, unless you understand angles.
Yeah.
And fractions and everything else.
So now all of a sudden we're with this. I mean, but you and I, if somebody would have flipped us a test somewhere in economics or social, whatever stuff you were in, and said, this is the solution to a city because the schools are degrading and the smart kids want to leave, and the parents are leaving town, you need them here for a tax basis, and our solution is to have some schools be selective enrollment, they can get out of there and go to someplace. I think all of us on this show and virtually every one of the listeners would say, and if we were to say 20 years from now, what's this going to create? Every one of them would have predicted what's happening now. There's a huge two-tier. The other schools suck. And if you don't get one of the other schools, you can't go to a public school or you got to get out of Dodge. I mean, we would have predicted that in a heartbeat, John. And now here we are. Now what's the solution? You can't close Payton and send everybody back to the other places and say, oh, go back to Inglewood and we're gonna fix Inglewood. I don't know what the solution is right now. Do you?
Well, I can tell you what the solutions that are being bandied around are not likely to do. When you got schools that have 38 students in them, you know, the latest budget, you know, demanded by the teachers union is to start adding staff to all schools so that they all have a band leader, they all have a music teacher, they all have an arts teacher, they all have a counseling staff. And if you have a school that has 38 students in it, you're going to start adding anything? You can't. If you can't add students, shut the damn thing down. I'm sorry, who's kidding who?
Well, I mean, is CVS still
open? But you can't do that in this climate now. That school will stay open and drain resources, you know, at the rate of $30,000 per student today. And I can guarantee you that, although that should look good on paper, if you got 38 students, that means you've got a great student-to-faculty ratio.
Well,
but I bet half the day the students don't show up in great numbers.
How about if you had? How about if you had no students? How about if you had no students and 10 faculty members?
And no teachers. And no teachers either, Tom.
Well, yeah, but, so, yeah, well, 10 teachers and no students, your faculty ratio is infinite. Is that good?
Yeah, so let's add some more staff positions to these schools and see what happens.
Well, but there's a certain amount of common sense to all this that we seem to be lacking.
No such thing as common sense.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder, what is our goal? You know, what is our goal? We're trying to produce people.
Our goal is to make everybody equally stupid.
I would hope. I'm saying, what would be our goal? I mean, my mom used to tell me. I mean, you know, we'd go to breakfast every Saturday, and everybody would say, "This is after I left home," and people would say, "God, what a great son! You know, you're the giver, she's the taker." And I go, "No, no, no. I was the taker, she was the giver." I mean, every week I learned something. I mean, most people would say, "What are you doing? You could be out doing God knows what else on a Saturday morning." I would have If she was still here this next Saturday, I'd be there. And I'd get some trinket of knowledge that I didn't have. But she goes, in the Depression, the schools were set up that there's no... She goes, they knew they would get no help from home. She goes, this idea that you basically screw around all day and then send everybody home with homework for the parents to help them with. She goes, in the Depression, she goes, Grandma and Grandpa were not going to help me with my homework. That's why I was in school, because they didn't know any of that stuff. Right? So, and not to mention the fact, they were too busy to help me. And she goes, if you gave a reading assignment, you told everybody to read a little pamphlet, maybe 4 or 5 pages, you got, you know, 20, half hour to read it, half hour to write up what was in it and what you thought about it, you turned it in and we talked about it. That's how you learn reading comprehension. You don't send crap home to the parents, hope people read it, they come in, half the people don't read it. It's not what you do. So you have an 8-year-old for 6 hours a day. What more do you need, for God's sake, what she used to say. That's plenty of time to teach math, keep spelling. You don't need to do nothing, to go on constant breaks, recesses, everything else, and send people home to do the work. She goes, where we ever got that? She goes, they didn't even think you knew how to cut your fingernails, and they told you how to take a bath. They told you how to do everything, how to brush your teeth, because everybody was an immigrant. They didn't know what you were learning at home, so they started right from the beginning. If she could have a conversation with the people on the school board today, they would wonder where the hell she came from, Jen.
Well, you know, that's back when schools were a combination of settlement house, etiquette programs, home ec. I mean, the schools felt that was their responsibility to educate everybody according to their needs. And now we've assumed that people all have the same needs, and they all should be given the same, you know, opportunities, but nobody should get any more opportunity than anybody else. And everybody should go to college, but nobody should, you know, try to get to the top of your class. Nobody should come out thinking that you've got a better shot at a job than anybody else. And it doesn't matter how hard you work, but that's, you know, something we don't believe in. That work equates to reward. No.
But the battle, I don't think they used to
play.
That's
why we got the Secret Service that we've got now, Tom.
Well, that's why, I mean,
a waste of space.
I would say, though, it's a thing that the people didn't have in my mother's time. You might have had an awful lot of dysfunctional families. I'm sure you did. I mean, there's never, you know, God, people have no change. So it's not like everybody went home and it was Mayberry. I mean, that's not the case. But I don't think the schools had to deal with the, I can't imagine my mother ever saying that somebody brought a gun to school. I mean, I don't think that anybody was on Ritalin. There wasn't any Ritalin. There wasn't any Adderall. I mean, there was none of that stuff. So the teachers at least didn't have to deal with that. I mean, if you called home, if they had a phone, if you sent a note home, your kid's a screw-up, the parents didn't sue the teacher. They probably beat the crap out of the kid, which probably isn't the best. But at least, I'm saying there was also a tie into the home that I don't think people have today. I mean, Audrey had this friend, and we went out to dinner, and she brought one of her buddies with her, and she was a teacher on the South Side. She goes, all this money the school board spends, I'm still paying out of pocket for pencils and all the other stuff. I don't know where these supplies go, but they're not getting to my class. So I'm buying this crap for everybody out of my paycheck. And she goes, the parents are never, you call home, first of all, there is no landline. You try and call home, they don't want to talk to you, or you can't get them. And oh, by the way, the kids are all on, not all, but a big percentage of them are on some kind of drugs, because the school counselor puts them on them, or somebody puts them on them. And she goes, if they're on their drugs, they're asleep on their desk. If they're not, they're bouncing off the ceiling. So education is a disaster, because the tie between some schools and the parents in that neighborhood is non-existent. So it's not like they don't have any issues to deal with, Jan. I mean, they didn't create those issues. And you're right, some of the response to it is, let's just pass everybody. Well, I don't think that's the response that ought to be, but well, what if you did?
Even worse, the culture has become, our job isn't to identify anybody in this student body who has a fighting chance to get out from under any of what they're facing at home or in this school by being a student in a school that has such a completely debased mean for its skill level.
All right, so
what you do then is you demoralize anybody who walks through the door. The school becomes, you know, committed to teaching to the lowest possible level of expertise, and preferably no expertise at all, because that keeps the money flowing.
All right, so
it keeps the system chugging along, but nobody comes out with any better aspiration, you know, that they can do something that they formerly couldn't do, or that they might be a little bit smarter than the kids sitting next to them. That's beaten out of these kids by being in such an environment.
Well, okay, now let's turn. These are the cards, for whatever reason, and what's the date today? And the date today, these are the cards we're being dealt on the 23rd of September, 2024, almost at 19. In fact, I did. My nephew's wife, she's terrific. Two great little girls. Got her day. There's something. But anyway, she teaches math in one of the near south side suburbs, more southwest suburbs. And she tells me all about the COVID stuff and the kids that don't know this, don't know that. And she said when they came back from COVID, when it came to sixth grade math, that is, I mean, I don't know if she knew about all the rest of the subjects, she goes, basically, 90% of those kids should not have passed into seventh grade. And I guess in the upper levels, in high school, I think when I tell you that they're going to sacrifice geometry, because that's not on the national test, that if you didn't learn algebra your freshman year because you were at home doing God knows what, they were going to do algebra again in the second year and forget about geometry. Same thing if you were a sophomore, instead of teaching geometry, you're going to go right to whatever you teach. What's third year in
trig?
Trig, maybe something like that. Whatever that is. See, what you said, the degradation, everybody's at least 2 years behind. So, okay, let's be hard asses here and say, here's the test for seventh grade. If you don't pass it, you don't go. Well, now what do you do? Your seventh grade is empty. Your sixth grade's got twice as many people. And the last thing we have in terms of money is the 15, 18, 20 grand a year that follows these kids year by year. We don't have 20 grand times sixth grade all over again. Yeah, we logistically, monetarily can't repeat. Now what do we do? Do we decide to have a summer program where people have a chance to somewhat catch up for the next two summers? What's that going to cost? Well, we're not going to do that either.
Well, the teachers will reject it flat out. So.
Well, but I'm saying, even if you and I were dictators over the teachers, that's we still got to pay them for the summer, right?
If they teach,
yeah,
but you can't.
Yeah, I'm saying, but if we decide the next two summers, everybody's going to go to summer school. Now, some kids have to work. Some people's parents have stores and stuff they work in and restaurants. Let's say we could do it. Okay, so we're going to do it now. Where do we get the scratch for that? And plus, it's not just sixth grade; it's fifth, fourth, everybody, because there's nobody that's caught up. I'm sure there's some kids that when they went home, the parents happened to be home and they had just the right computer set up, and the parents stayed behind them with a stick, and if they didn't get on the TV and listen to the TV, well, it could have been the TV if you had a smart TV, listen to the teacher and do the work, they slapped them in the back of the head with a stick. I'm sure there were some percentage of kids like that maybe aren't behind. What percentage do you think that is? 5%? 10?
Well, it'd be great if it were, but...
It's some kids, I'm sure, they hung in there pretty well. But her name's Bernadette, she told me something about, they did a calc test, and evidently, if you're home, you young guys like you and Greg know, evidently you can put the calc problem in the computer and the solution will pop out or something. You know, there's math sites you can go to. And she goes, she told everybody to put their phones over in the corner, and everybody flunked, even if people were home passing. There was nobody passed. So now, okay, you got a whole calc class or whatever the hell they are. You know, every one of them, every answer they ever gave you was from the computer. Now what do you do? do you do the year over? Where do we get the dough from that? What if the Catholic schools, I think, pretty much stayed open, but if they didn't, we do tell the parents you got to pay another year? I mean, these problems.
Well, Catholic schools stayed open. They tested the students every day and sent you home if you were positive for COVID.
Yeah,
but they kept in class instruction. They had graduation ceremonies. All the things that the public schools and a lot of private schools too just threw out the window and destroyed their students' happiness and mental health
and educational
health too. Tom, all this is by design. I started teaching part-time in the late 80s and landed a full-time job in the community college system in the early 90s. And I'd say for the first 10 years or so, things were going quite well. And I was impressed by, even in the, you know, the community that my school drew its students from, which was all over the ballpark in terms of skill level and funding and, you know, safety and everything else, there were always students, and more than you might expect, that were clearly well trained. They knew grammar, they knew, you know, basic math very well. They were articulate, they could write, they were interesting, they were well-rounded people, they were socialized well. It all changed in my recollection around 2004. And that was the first year, which of course, right,
what was corresponding what was significant about it? There was no, wasn't like 2007, 8, where there was a big recession or anything. There was nothing happened bad in 2004, was there really?
Well, No Child Left Behind.
Okay.
Which, you know, threw out grammar, phonics, whole language instruction. Let's rethink the wrong answer to a math problem and see if students can find out why that answer is wrong. Instead of teaching them how to find the right answer, this is, to me, no wonder people can't do math anymore.
Oh yeah, well.
After 2004, it got progressively worse, and it became more and more clear to me that the only students who were really coming to community college well prepared were the ones who were homeschooled. And these are also students who came out of honors programs at well-funded, well-regarded public high schools that had just completely lost touch with history, they lost touch with grammar, they lost touch with basic math. In the space of, you know, my first 10 years
Well, you would
so,
think no child left behind means everybody should be brought up, not the other people brought down.
Well, it means that no child left behind means that everybody's at the bottom.
Well, I told you a story about, you met this one dude, he works for the mortgage place. Well, his girlfriend is, fiance, is, he teaches in one of the Southside public schools and, you know, was doing the remote teaching. So she comes in, and the principal wants to see her the minute they're back in school, right? So, I mean, the principal wanted to see the teachers, like the principal wanted to see you and me. Not a good thing, right? So in she goes, and the guys, let's put it this way. If there had been a paddle on the wall, they would have used it. What did you flunk these two guys for? And she says, well, the other people that I passed, I probably shouldn't have. They don't know very well, but at least they were on the Zoom thing or whatever you want to call it once in a while. At least I knew they were there, and I know their names, and I know their faces. The two people I flunked, I never saw. How the hell am I going to pass them if I never saw them? Guy goes, didn't matter. You got to pass them. Now, there's some level of, I don't know what, but I don't know what, John, but it's somewhere between the family's not thinking it's important, the teacher's not, some place, you're right, it fell off. And I honestly don't know why, because most parents don't really want a bunch of dummies for kids because the parents weren't brought up that way. Why did they put up with it?
Well, you know, the schools always have their head count the first 10 days or so of the semester. And you know, the state community college system did the same thing. I had to, you know, identify every student in one of my classes as being present and pursuing the class, or, you know, never having been met. They never showed up for one single class period, or they stopped coming at some point. And of course, the scuttlebutt was, don't take them off of your list if they're not showing up. Although I never bought into this, of course, but don't take them off your list just because they're not showing up. That's money that the college doesn't get now, because the TED count determines what kind of funding it gets. So better we fund students who aren't showing up and get to waste that money doing something else with it. And who cares if students come or not, or in some cases, pass them. If they're still on the class list at the end of the semester and they never drop the class, give them an A. Who cares? This is the culture I could see coming. I didn't want any part of it.
An A, eh? A's just be hard to get.
Welcome to the 21st century, though.
You know, I remember
nothing easier than an A. Nothing easier.
Well, I remember it. At Notre Dame, right before we got there, it used to be A, B, C, D, F, right? And I think, was it the year before we got there or 2 years before, they introduced the minus.
Yes.
And people would say, well, that's pretty cool. Should be easier to get a good grade point average. No, it wasn't. Because they could always find something wrong with you to get an A, then you got the A minus. Right? I don't like that guy. The anyway, so it really became incredibly...
Yeah, beware of these fine distinctions. They can bite you, too.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, there's no way... To get a 3.8 average was really, really tough, because it was really tough to get an A.
Yep.
Because the A-minus is so much easier to give, right?
Yeah, well, of course, now, getting an A, what would it mean in this kind of educational climate, Tom, unless you give everybody an A?
Well, it's called...
Which is kind of, I think, the directive that's being given. Everybody should be excellent.
Well, you know, when the first...
It's got to be the same no matter whether it is, unless I make them excellent.
Now, think back to your relative youth. And the first time I used this term, grade creep, which is, I mean, do you know any kid now who's going to college that doesn't have, like, a 3.8 in high school? No, I mean, there's no such thing as a... I'm not saying there ought to be a curve. I thought those things were disgusting, but... Anybody knows what a curve is. It means in every class, no matter how smart or how dumb, some people, 60% of the people get C's or 50, and it look like a normal curve with C in the middle. What started the creep, and when we were in, I started out in pre-med at Notre Dame, John, I don't know if you knew that or not, my freshman year, and but I never wanted to be. Marist had a pretty aggressive science thing, so I didn't want to take racks for jacks. Geology, for those that don't know what that is. So I took like AMLT and those things, those kinds of classes. But I never wanted to be a doctor. So after freshman year, I pile out into economics. The only problem there is I had to take 2 semesters of the language, which I'm really horrible at, since obviously I'm horrible at English. But if you were in a pre-med at Notre Dame, it was so highly regarded as a institute of higher learning, I'll use the term, that if you get out of there, they'd never had anybody who got out of there with a B average, because they just weeded people out all along the way. And they came out of there with a B average and did not get into a med school. I'm going to say a decent med school, but there was no such thing as a crummy med school. And when we graduated, they kept to that mantra. Meanwhile, a lot of other schools are doing this grade creep. And it's really hard to give somebody from Notre Dame with a 3.1 average, a way in when somebody else is coming out of God knows where with a 3.6. Even though you knew in your heart of hearts that the 3.1 here was probably better than the 3.6 somewhere else, it's kind of hard to prove that. So after a period of time, even the Irish started giving more A-minuses and so forth, because they didn't want really, really good students coming out with a 3.0. It started really way back then, didn't it? And then it just kind of...
The idea that, colleges or high schools are in the business of customer service. So, you complain enough and you hector the administration or teacher enough to get your B instead of the D that you really earned. And after a while, there's a fatigue factor. Okay, all right. It's either that or I'm going to be on somebody's dog list for not going along with this. But it starts, way back. The time when in an open enrollment environment like the community college, when students come in off the street and they want to take classes like an English 101 or a math 101 or something, they need to be screened to figure out, are we just taking tuition money and finding the student is completely...
Yes, 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 tuition money, yes.
Yeah, so, two people would read essays, all these people trying to enter and get into an English class, and I used to do it too. You had to have two readers agree this person could do English 101 work, or this person is
God, how bad do you got to be to not get into English 101?
Well, you got to be a graduate of a lot of our schools, because we had an 097, 098, 099 English program that didn't count towards graduation. You had to pass it to get, competency in order to take.
In other words, you had to be able to write, you had to be able to spell, you had to be able to keep a thought.
Right, things would identify. There was an editing test that was done on the computer, like a multiple choice thing about identifying subject verb issues, verb cases, whatever. Basic kind of editing of grammar problems, and then you had to write an essay. You had a choice of one of three prompts to write on, and it was timed. You get half hour to write it, and you look for things that, well, if this person doesn't know this, they're never going to, you know, we don't teach that in 101, or we'd never get it to anything more accomplished than that. So we had other places down the, you know, the line where you could place students, but you always find, you know, no matter how fair you thought you were, you'd have some parent or friend or some student coming in screaming and yelling, you put me in English 097 and I got straight A's all through high school. In English, my best subject.
You say what was the high school? What's happening now?
Well, that's about, of course, exactly for my first question. What high school was that, by the way?
Yeah.
Probably very invasive on my part. Maybe
you're not legal, supposed to ask that. Well, John, when I went,
but this is the problem. You know, the grade inflation had foolishly, you know, made everybody feel like I can succeed. I'm going to be right at the top of my class, and now I'm three levels down from where I was. You know, I would have felt incredibly cheated if that happened to me. And of course, they weren't cheated.
It's kind of weird. There were all schools of thought. I mean, at Marist, there was one guy who said, "I don't mark on the curve." He goes, "If all you guys learn everything, I got no problem giving everybody an A. If none of you learn anything, I got no problem giving everybody an F." So I mean, you know, there were different schools of thought on that. One of the most, I'm going to say, I don't know if it's unfair, but Guess who used to mark on a curve, believe it or not? University of Chicago. But, which you might say, well, that's okay, a lot of places did. They were the only ones, they would, whenever, I won't say every single time, but most of the time, when a professor taught a subject, you know, be it finance or marketing, whatever the hell they taught, they would teach it on campus. The campus was at Hyde Park in those times, that's where I went, and they would teach it downtown at the 190 program, which is in this building, I don't even know, it was air-conditioned, right behind Sears Tower. And so here I am, you know, fresh as a whatever, coming out of Notre Dame, just all this stuff fresh in my mind. I'm living at home. I get up, I go to class, play basketball for 2 hours, maybe stop into the library, take another class, go home. I have plenty of time to study. I don't have kids. I don't have that stuff. They were marking us on the curve with the people who came at night. So instead of instead of 2 hour and a half classes, which is hard enough to hang with, they'd have 1 3-hour class, which is brutal, especially if you've worked all day and you got kids at home and a wife when you get there. There's no way on earth that we were, quote, equals in the sense, I mean, those guys probably were smarter than me, but the fact is, in 2 years, not one person in the 190 program ever got a grade as good as I did in a test. Now, when I went off to the economic school, none of those guys were downtown, so I'm going to talk about 9 classes. But still, that should never have been a curve, John. I don't think. Do you?
No, well, and I mean, the thinking I think people use for why they curve at all is because, you know, a teacher feels that they have some assessment instrument, a test or whatever, and they look to see how, you know, the class generally performed on it, and assuming that you covered everything the way you thought you had, you look for flaws in that reasoning. If nobody got, say, questions 2 through 4 correct, you feel either you didn't cover it well enough or the testing instrument was somehow at fault because it was unclear. People should have known it, but the test made it difficult for them to know what you were talking about. So it becomes like a self-correcting thing where you decided that maybe there's some flaw that I haven't accounted for that everybody falls into the same boat with, so I need to treat this as affecting everybody's potential performance. The problem wasn't with student accomplishment, it was with some kind of defect in the assessment method. So, you know, I understand that, but of course now it's gotten a little out of control, and that's where you get grade inflation, where the problem is always teacher. The problem is never the student. The student is always right. Give the student / customer what he or she wants. That's why we're in this bag now.
Well, you got, plus now you got, I one difference, and this is only, well, 1 year after, in Notre Dame, nobody, I don't know if anybody ever bitched at their grade. If you got a C, you deserve it. Yeah, you got
never. There were plenty I disagreed with. But boy, I dreaded even going to see a teacher for fear that it looked like I was asking for something.
The only time I was pissed is I took taxation with all the accountants. And it was supposed to be a class that the accounting guys, because they beat those guys up pretty bad, everybody got an A. And I got the same I think I did better than the guys we knew that were accountants, and they gave me an A minus because I wasn't in accounting. but I wasn't up to about to go up to Dinkel. Was a monster of a guy. Said, hey, where's my A? I wasn't going to do that. In Chicago, people bitched all the time. A lot of them came from the East Coast. Yeah. They would bitch about grades constantly. It was always, what do you mean? This test was unfair. I mean, I would no more would do that than a man in the moon. Talk about...
In community colleges too, Tom. I was always defending what I had done to some angry student.
I can't even... When I first saw people bitching at the guy, I'm going, what are they doing? You never bitched up on anybody at Notre Dame. You'd have been... If anybody saw you do that, nobody played basketball with you. You'd have been some kind of weenie or something. I mean, I can't even imagine it. Well, you're going to hang around for Rod. We're going to talk a little about real estate and try and make sense of what the market's doing here and try and piece together whether or not if the 10-year keeps going up, even if the Fed keeps pushing the near term down, what does that mean for mortgages? Does that mean if you get a good rate, should you grab it or should you wait? And how much do you think the 10-year is going to go up? 10-year has been going up pretty much every day. It's up to 3.76 now. I'm going to say when the Fed made their announcement, well, that's Greg. You know, it's probably more like 3.5. You're right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. We got Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 10. NASDAQ Futures up 54. Matt always does a nice job every Monday. He gets robbed out of a lot of Mondays because we got all the holidays on Monday. But it's always good to see Matt.
They're stealing it from me.
And Matt's going to be setting up, I don't know if everybody knows, Russell, the people down in Indiana now. I guess they're teachers and grad students alike have kind of a coffee clutch to talk about business from evidently 7:45 to 8 every Wednesday. And they know he's on the show, and a lot of them listen, I guess. And he said they asked him if he wanted to expand, they would come in 15 minutes earlier so that the last half hour on Wednesday would be like an open forum with the faculty and the business students talking about the markets and stuff. And Matt's going to set that up for us. I bet they're already set up for Zoom and stuff down there.
Definitely, yeah.
You might have to come in a Wednesday the first time, Matt, because you're our best guy. But I have a hunch that'll be fun, don't you think?
That sounds pretty fun, yeah. Well, anyway, sounds like a good time.
S&P futures are up 10. NASDAQ futures up 55. Who knows? We might learn something for some of the professors. Definitely. Guys like guys like Flanagan and Russell and Hal, and everybody's a professor here but me. This is kind of crazy. And you, Matt. Dax up.
You're one, emeritus now.
Emeritus? Yes. Dax up 115. What am I? Am I a softball player emeritus? A handball player emeritus? Anyway, Dax up 115.6%. Footsie down 5. Call that flat. Kakarot down 8. Call that flat. So very odd goings on over in Europe today. Asia, Nikkei's closed, which is odd. And Hang Seng down 11. Call that flat. Shanghai up 12.4%. Trying to get back to 2750, 2748. On Friday, a mixed kind of snoozer day. Dow up 38, S&P down 11, NASDAQ down 65. So I think we had a pretty strong week anyway. Bonds, a 10-year is 4 basis points, 3.76. I got it at like 3.6 when the Fed made their announcement, so it's crept up some. So mortgage rates have come down a little bit, but if the 10-year keeps creeping, I don't see them coming down much more, but we're going to listen to Audrey and John opine on that. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.18. Japan down 2 basis points, 0.83. Oil down 2 cents, 70.98. Brent down 9 cents, 74.40. Oil really has just not been a factor, really, in the inflation or anything lately. It's just been right around here. Makes a run up once in a while and comes right back down. Natural gas up 6 cents, 2.49. A long way from the $2 it was not that long ago. Arbob, so maybe they're taking his La Nina, which might be in a cold winter, to heart. Arbob down a penny, 2.02. Gold down a dime, but still 26.46, pretty high. Silver down 49 cents, though, 31.01. Copper down a penny, 4.32. Foreign exchange, euro right about where it's been, 111. The pound where it's been, 133. So the dollar's been slightly negative lately, but very little. Japan down 8 to 143.83. And we have Bitcoin up 435, still going up here, 63,433. A lot of stuff, man. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Are the Bears still going to be, after the first game, they were going to be, what, 15 and 2, now maybe 2 and 15? What are they going to be?
Yeah, I don't think the Bears are going to be anything.
No.
Yeah, they're not doing super well this season, but I got to let you know that it's currently 7:38 a.m. September 23rd, 2024. As far as weather in Chicago, we're at 61 degrees at O'Hare, high of 69 today. Mostly sunny skies with a little cloud coverage. Tonight, though, cloudy with some passing showers and a low of 62. Down in Phoenix, 75 degrees right now. Later in the day, high of 101 degrees. High as a low of 72 with sunny skies all day long. In the MLB yesterday, with the White Sox lost to the San Diego Padres. That was 4-2. The Cubs, though, beat Washington Nationals 5-0. In the NFL yesterday, Bears lost to the Colts. That was 21-16. The Packers beat Titans 30-14. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do we have Audrey?
We do indeed, yeah.
Audrey, how are you?
Just fine. What a beautiful fall morning.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty nice. So it hasn't rained in a month, and the one day it rained was on a Sunday.
I know. It interrupted your softball party.
Yes. Well, as I recall, you were going to be there with your knife and fork in hand as well.
Well, those people always bring some pretty good food.
Yes, they do. and why not? Anyway, John, where... The predictions with the Fed heading the other direction here is what is it going to do to real estate? And, you know, you and I have been jousting, I won't say arguing, we'll say talking, sort of in the middle, regarding kind of the haves and have-nots. And boy, nobody can drive it into me like Aud does when she talks about people coming off houses that they bought 10 years ago. You know, kind of a, I guess I'll use the term blue collar price, and all of a sudden they're selling them and buying places that, you know, for money that nobody ever really earned. when I say earned, if you invest well and the price of what you invested in went up, like, I mean, I have to use the term earned, but or capital gain or whatever. But now we're seeing mortgage rates are down. They're not under 6 yet, are they? They're in the low 6s.
They're 6. Again, these are all more of Nancy questions, but I asked her, she said something hovering at like 599, 598, but you have to have that really good credit. So her point was that right now it's made, you've got a small drop, but you haven't seen it, you know, it shake the world yet. But, you know, there's stuff there. So, you know, it's worth it's worth checking around if you're looking now, and it's still better than it was a year ago. And again, if you lock something in around, you know, 5.95 to 6 even, you could always refinance down the road when this all shakes out. But if you're catching something at 6, better than a bounce if it bounces to 7, which I don't think it will. Now, just going to see it hover here.
When you say shakes out, and one man's opinion, I'll lob this out there to the two experts, I'm going to say 6 on a 50-year plan is about as normal a number as you're going to get. I mean, this idea of going back to 3, does anybody think that's going to happen?
No, that's never going to happen. I would never say never, but I think that if we ended up somewhere right around 5 to 5.5, that would be a pretty good average rate considering historical norms. And I think John knows this too. We used to hover at around 8. Were houses cheaper then? Hell yes, but still. I think if we get in now,
You're getting loud and you're loud and then you're soft. Are you bouncing back and forth from the mic or something?
No.
Oh, all right. Well,
is that better if I back up? I'm going to back up farther?
Yeah, a little bit.
Sounds a little better, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, John, what would you, if you had to pick a number, I think when my parents bought the place in 1958, God, or 59, I think it was 6, 6.25, something like that. Then you used to get like 3, 3.5 on your passbook at the savings and loan. The mortgages were 6. There was like a 3-point spread, and the spread paid for the guys in the white shirts and ties, the building, the Little League uniforms, and there was like a 3-point spread, which, looking back on it, was fairly competitive. I mean, right now, what's the spread? I mean, the bank you get nothing, and the mortgage rates are whatever. So, I mean,
my Illinois guaranteed student loan out of college was 6%, which seemed, you know, perfectly normal in, you know, 1974. I remember my parents maybe one time had a 5.75% interest rate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, somewhere in that range.
The old Chesterfield Federal, when there were savings and loans, you know, that were very competitive.
Chesterfield was on 87th Street, right?
Yeah, well, it used to be in 83rd and Cottage Grove, and then they moved to 108th and Western.
Well, that's right, that's right. There. Yeah. We were Concordia. Where were you guys, Tallman?
Well, Tallman. My parents went to Tallman, 55th and Kenzie.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they had free coffee and donuts. I remember they used to have the most, and I was little, but they had the most beautiful artwork. And they used to have art by this guy called, I believe, Robert Addison. And to this day, I admire his art. And I actually have one side original for that Tom bought me years ago. You remember that, Tom, at an auction?
Yeah.
But they had this beautiful art, and it was very a hushed and elegant bank. But I remember it was a whole different experience than walking into a bank now.
what was the name of the guy who was the... boy, John, here's a story from out of the past. Who was the guy that was the real estate guy you originally worked for? That was a big Notre Dame dude. What was his name?
Bill Cahill.
Bill Cahill. Well, you knew Bill, who's, you know, way older than us. Well, his dad, who was obviously way older than him, John, they were at
55th and Ashland.
55th and Ashland. And when
that was my first, where I got my first job at Mr. Cahill Sr. was of the old school. It was always dressed very fully, wore a black bowler hat.
I always wore a
black
bowler
coat
hat.
With a red boutonniere every day.
Oh, wow.
Talk about things you remember when you were like real young, Jenny. When my mom and dad first got married, they moved in, you know, they lived with my aunt and her son in the Howe House at 51st and Morgan, 50th and Morgan, this little frame house. Well, at some point, my mom and dad saved up and up where they bought a place at 56th and Bishop. And there was a tenant downstairs, and you had to walk up the steps to our place, right? And it didn't have central heat. You had the stove in the living room or the dining room.
Oh, yeah.
And so the mortgage was at Cahill's. So my mother would leave. I think that mortgage, is it possible it was like 15 bucks on it? 15 or 20 bucks?
Sure.
Yeah, and so my aunt would walk up there, And old man Cahill, who had, well, my mom was kind of a looker, and he'd, boy, if I was 30 years younger, you wouldn't be single. But we'd go up there and give the mortgage was $15, and he'd turn around and give me a buck. He'd give my brother Dan like a big sucker, because he was like two, and he loved him. My aunt was always pissed off that I got the buck, and he should have got a buck and a sucker. my mother's like, we give the mortgage is $15. You want the guy to give us $2 back?
That was better marketing than giving you a toaster.
Well, one day it started pouring rain, and he drives us home, and all he did, kept talking about, he was not I think the guy had dough, but he was not a guy who spent it.
No, he was very well fixed.
I remember driving home, he had like a 50 Plymouth with three on the tree, and he was like, the reason why I drive this thing is one of these days it's going to conk out, and I'm going to pull it over, take the license plates off, and just leave it where it dies. there is an attitude for
it. I used to buy cars off my uncle all the time. They were, which is how I met Mr. Cahill. I was looking for something to do, and my uncle's like, and he was very, very self-made, successful man. And he's like, I'm going to introduce you to him. You might like real estate. And here I am.
Well, and he would come to he ended up being on the Notre Dame Club of Chicago for 40-50 years, where he and my buddy Craig Fowler did like all the interviews for years to give kids a scholarship, the scholarships from the Notre Dame Club of Chicago. The Notre Dame Club of Chicago, for those that don't know,
you're talking about Junior, Bill Junior, right?
Junior, yeah, Bill Junior, and all the other clubs. Just even though the Chicago club is by far the biggest and the most powerful, all the other clubs just get their money and they send it to the university, which I don't know if you knew that or not. Notre Dame Club of Chicago didn't. They kept their money, and what they would do is people in the Chicago area, after they went through the process at the university, if they were 1,000 or 2,000 short on the year, they'd give them a special little stipend so those kids could go to Notre Dame. And the university had this love-hate relationship. The idea that we were independent, of course, they couldn't stand and just didn't give them the money. Yeah. But even so, there was so much power here, they couldn't really lower the boom on us either, because we were too powerful. It's amazing.
Well, it was a tremendous recruiting tool for the university.
Oh, God, yeah. But then it got to the point where guys got so pissed off here, and the club is kind of degraded. And what the university would do is they would give the package together for the student. If they found out the Notre Dame club gave many more money, they'd pull back on their package.
Well, that's nasty.
Yeah, which really pissed everybody off here to the extremes. But so we promised that you and Jen, if short-term rates keep going down, but maybe people think that that's going to at least stop the decrease in inflation. I guess what I'm saying is, if we go from 5.5 to 4 on the short term, but the long term goes from 3.5 to 4.5. Does that drop mortgages much from here? I don't think so, but you guys are the experts. I think they might even go up a little bit, but what do you think?
I think you might get some movement, but I think unless you correct the price of oil and the other things that are going on in our economy right now, and you get rid of inflation in the world in general, this is only part of the picture. You've got to fix everything else. You've got to fix the, got to let Chad talk, because I'll go on about that forever.
Audrey, it would seem that, when the rates are starting to come down as they are, that this would be a bump, mean a bump in the inventory, because people would now see, gee, I can sell this place and actually afford to, or come close to affording to buy something. And at the other end, somebody who maybe was gun shy, couldn't get into the housing market, now sees an opportunity. So it should imply that there's going to be a whole fleet of houses coming onto the market. Do you see any evidence that that's starting to happen?
I think your premise is exactly right, and that's what I believe they want to have happen. We talked about it, and back in June I said that was the top of the market. It appears that was so, and I have seen, especially the last, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks, there's a lot more inventory on the market now. And I think part of it is the interest rate hope that things have come down and people are in the market. I don't think you're seeing as much of the, I still think it's going to be hard to probably a 3% mortgage out of people's fingers. But the people who, a lot of it's necessity. In some of these areas, you're simply saying people pass away. You're saying, you know, a death, a mortgage, a job transfer. So the natural source of events is happening. Plus, I think also some people now are saying, well, you know what? I do want to move, and 6% is better than 8%. So what the hell? Let's go. Because, you know, actually, some people haven't refinanced. So let's say for the people who didn't refinance or got caught in the middle, you know, and maybe say they bought when things crept up to somewhere between 4.5% and 6%, they're not. Oh, so now it's not going to be as much of a negative factor. So they're jumping in on the market too. So you're seeing a couple contributing factors going on right now.
Well, at some point, if you keep having kids, you need a bigger place. And if you're right, I mean, Nancy last week, what'd she say, Jan? That if we ever get down to like 5.5% and somebody's at 4%, you know, 1.5%, they might make the jump. You know, 1.25% maybe.
Yeah. I mean, then people will. It's not as mind blowing as when you went from, from 3.5% to, you know, 7%. And people are going to go, whoa. But if it's a point or so, most people can stomach the difference. That's what I'm thinking. But it's, you know, there has been an uptick in activity also. So it's getting busier now. Fall season typically, as you know, people like to think we're different than animals. We're really not. Fall's coming in. Animals are nesting, getting ready for the winter. People do too. And it's such a subconscious thing that they want to be in before winter. They want to be in before the holidays. So like September to Thanksgiving, and then if the weather stays not too cold and snowing, you'll see it continue through the holidays, especially if these interest rates drop.
One of the things, and I don't want to get into the, I just want to stay in the numbers part of this and not the politics, but obviously they come together. How is it, or that it doesn't seem, because of the people that, you know, I think you would agree with me on this, of one thing, I stay out of your business because you're good at what you do and you don't need my input. I just screw you up. But I'm really surprised that the, and maybe they have, maybe there's other things on the other side that have driven it the other way. I'm surprised to the point of being shocked that the increases in taxes have not really beat up on these house prices. I mean, I don't see how somebody, my guys, we met for a couple of cocktails on Friday night, and one of the dudes was talking about his father or his neighbor or somebody in hell pulled out their tax bill from Winnetka. It's like up 22% or 20. We're not talking about. We're talking about it used to be like $25,000, and now it's like 32 or something like.
But Illinois is crazy, and that is Illinois politics. I mean, you have to look at what Chicago's broke. They can't make their budget.
Why is not the extra $500-$800 a month, or even in the South Side in some of the neighborhoods that aren't as expensive? How does the other? If you start dropping $400 or $500 a month or $300 a month more and your cost to live there, if I do my you know, fourth grade math here, I'm taking 15% off the price of that house, and yet it's not happening. I mean, it doesn't seem to be happening. Is it going to happen all at once, or people just have the dough to pay it? I don't care.
I don't think that you're not going to see it, because people are paying for several things. They're paying for safety. They're paying for schools. So somebody's going to go out and get a part-time job, but the fact that the city and the state could think they can keep squeezing the residents, which is one reason Illinois has such a big exodus, they're going to simply make it unbearable for people. I have one friend of mine, she's a senior citizen, and she's seriously believes that she's going to have to sell her house, to your point. Her tax escrow on a relatively reasonably priced townhome went up $300 a month. Now that's a lot for somebody on a fixed income.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I'm not.
But is she thinking about moving out of this particular area? No, she has children and grandchildren here. So many forces are going to come together to make you stay here instead of moving to Indiana or Iowa, you know, where you're going to get a little better shake. And until the government spending in Illinois is out of control, and they you know, eventually people are going to have, are probably going to say enough and do something about it. More than half of my tax bill are for schools.
Yeah, well, I'm not, I mean, the politics of it, I mean, I'm not going to disagree on that part, but I'm saying it, in terms of my part of the world, and a real, John, you're on more than what, a lot of what we talk about on the show, unfortunately, is the economic principles that are just right there in front of everybody's face. Sometimes either don't apply anymore or are delayed application. Now, in my world, if you were to give somebody a test in whatever junior year college economics class, and you would say, Audrey Johnson has got this home and she's trying to sell it for $500,000. And by the way, the mortgage rates look like they're 5.5%, and it looks like the taxes are you know, $6,000 a year. I'll make it easy because it's divisible by 12, $500 a month. And by the way, the insurance is, I'll use $3,000 a year. It's probably not that high. So the insurance is $200 a month. And what happens if the taxes double and the insurance double? Every kid better put the price of that house is dropping to get the number that people can pay per month, the total number of home ownership. The price of the house, with everything else being equal, has to drop. Yet they haven't. Is it just a delay?
I don't know what John thinks about this, but you know, I've said this for quite a while that it's not happening now. But if this happens, everything's going again like it did, back in our last recession. Okay, so, and I agree with Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon is saying that this is coming and coming bad. And I think if it happens, it's going to happen really fast again. You know, I mean, if you look at the unemployment, the businesses closing, the large companies consolidating or closing or selling out, we're on a really thin line. It's either going to be okay or it's not. And if it's not, all bets are off like it was last time.
Yeah, once it starts to... John, what do you think? I mean, why haven't the numbers... I mean, I've heard people say their homeowner insurance is up 20%, 2025. Florida, it's off the chart. You talked to Dan on Thursdays, Dan Janitas. But these taxes, I mean, when our buddy Greg, he lives in what do they call River North, John, just above the crest? He's River North, and he didn't get a tax assessment. His taxes were the same for like 6 years. It was like, you know, 15, 18 grand. All of a sudden, he gets the next bill, and it's like 25. And I said, congratulations, Greg. The price of your townhome just dropped by 15%. You know, yeah, you're right. Yet it hasn't. I mean, maybe it would have been up 15, and it's not. You know, it's possible, I suppose. But
well, I think it will happen, and it will happen precipitously. You know, when the second installment bill comes out, and there's already been, you know, a reassessment notice for those people, so they're anticipating some, you know, outrageous increase in their taxes. They are going to make plans pretty quickly to be out by, say, a year from then. They don't want to pay this anymore, and I think the market is likely to be flooded by properties in areas where there's been reassessment, and the taxes have, you know, jumped and they're never coming back down again. So you will see this happen, and I think a rotating basis, just by the way the reassessment process works here, and it's likely to, you know, it could end up in a firestorm, you know, with fire sale prices of people knowing that the property's value is greatly reduced because of this new tax bill. I don't want to pay it, but I'm not going to be able to charge, you know, for this house what I could have charged before this tax bill jumped. So you're going to see a flight of I think huge proportions, and it will be the people who otherwise would stay. You know, they may be retired. They don't, you know, worry too much about the schools because they don't have kids in them anymore, and they've kind of figured out how to live on what they have, and they're not going to be able to do it with these tax bills. So you're going to see people who would otherwise be good, stable, tax-paying citizens flee the state in huge numbers, and it will happen on a rotating basis, meaning it won't stop. It'll be, you know, every year there's going to be a whole new group of people who are being priced out of living here.
You or Nance, we can roll over a minute here. You or Nance, one of you, or maybe it was you, John, somebody took credit for this. If I have an escrow account and I'm putting, say, 500, I just use round numbers, but I put $500 a month in escrow from my use the term savings and loan, boy, talk about showing my age. Wherever the mortgage is, I put $500 in there, and it turns out we miscalculate, and the tax thing comes out, and I should have been putting $600. So I owe $1,200 to somebody. Now, if I don't have the $1,200, like I said, one of you was telling me that the bank has to essentially lend me the $1,200. So going forward, I got to pay them back. All right. So
correct.
But now it's $600 a month going forward. So I actually probably have to pony up $700 a month from the $500 because $6 is what I think I owe going forward, and another $100's for the stuff that I owe from going back. So my escrow is going to go up by like more than the tax went up if it turns out I didn't escrow enough before, right?
That's right. Correct. I mean, you could give them a chunk of money as a cushion to keep your mortgage payments every month at a livable level, but that's tying up your money. And it's not likely, it's never going to go in the other direction. We're always going to have to be putting up more and more to keep the tax escrow at the right level. And I just see, is the people that otherwise, have never had trouble surviving, even if they're on fixed incomes, that are going to be most, freaked by this. The people who pay their taxes later, don't pay them at all or whatever, they're not really bothered by this.
Well, last question, and neither one of you or I can answer. Why have we, and this is not educational, this is not political, but why have we seemingly got ourselves so dumbed down to the fact that last year, what I understand, if you get your Social Security, if you're over 65, for those that don't know this, your Medicare comes out of your Social Security, so you don't have a chance to not pay it, right? The hospital part, anyway. If the hospital comes out, you get included. The doctor part, if you up for it, comes out of your Social Security. So last year, I think when they sent out the stuff, didn't the Social Security go up 3%, allegedly the rate of inflation, according to the government? But the doctor part went up like 4.5%, Jan. Well,
yeah, the Part B premium went up.
You just sent everybody a letter saying don't believe the inflation number. It's still we do. I mean, could you make it more plain for people that you're lying to them? I mean, how do you sit there? Wait a minute. Shouldn't they be the same? Duh. I mean, if you can send that to people and they swallow it, you can try just about anything, can't you?
Right, and if you have a supplement or an advantage Medicare Advantage plan on top of that too, well, that's not going down.
Oh no. Well, I think, well, I don't know if this is the number, and I'll let you guys go. But good stuff. I think if you have a solid Medicare Advantage plan and a drug plan and the doctor plan you're paying from your Social Security, I think the tab is $600 a month, isn't it?
That'd be about right.
It could be, yeah.
So anybody thinks that if you're over 65 that your insurance is free, really, really better take a pill because it's not. It's $600 a month.
That's for crappy care, too.
Yeah, well, anyway, John, thank you. We jousted about some good stuff. Odd good stuff, as usual. I'll talk to you guys soon. John, next week for sure, if not before. I always talk to you. Matt, nice job.
No problem.
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here.
That's all, folks.
Looks like I picked the wrong week to quit amphetamines.